Ave Maria in the Afternoon is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. Welcome to Ave Maria in the Afternoon, examining the world through the lens of faith from the heart of the Church to help us navigate the culture. Here's Dr. Marcus Peter.
Good afternoon. Thank you very much for joining us on this hour of Ave Maria in the Afternoon. I'm Marcus Peter. Real joy to be with all of you today. We're going to begin by talking with Bishop Thomas of Toledo, the Diocese of Toledo, about President Donald Trump recently saying that Republicans need to be flexible on taxpayer-funded abortion. A lot of this involves some walking back of campaign promises that he made during his first run at presidency. But the second run has not been as visibly pro-life as when he was that he was claiming in the first run. Bishop Daniel Thomas joins us to respond to this particular statement that House Republicans need to be flexible on taxpayer-funded abortions. We go on from there to speak with Andrew Picciotti-Bear. The Supreme Court is hearing oral arguments this week in two cases that will determine whether states can preserve girls' sports teams. And we'll talk about this in great detail. And finally, we speak with Father Donald Calloway. Father Donald Calloway has recently put out another book, this time a consecration to the Holy Family, 33 Days to the Holy Family, consecration to Jesus, Mary, and Joseph. The Holy Family serves as the pattern and model for marriage and family. It demonstrates what these are, as well as the correct understanding of masculinity and fatherhood, femininity and motherhood, babies and children. In our age with this tremendous confusion, it's time to reconsecrate ourselves to the Holy Family. So we talk with Father Donald Calloway about this. All this we talk about after the headlines.
Thanks, Marcus. Good afternoon, everyone. This is your Ave Maria Radio News for Wednesday, January 14th. It's the feast of St. Macrina the Elder. Today's news brought to you by Ave Maria University. Your vocation location is at avemaria.edu. President Trump says the killing in Iran is stopping.
We've been told that the killing in Iran is stopping, and it's stopped, and it's stopping. And there's no plan for executions or executions.
Trump wouldn't elaborate on the information or where it came from. The president has warned Iran the U.S. is looking at options, possibly using the military for intervening in the crackdown of anti-government protests, and stands, quote, ready to help. Human rights activists say over 2,500 people have been killed by Iranian authorities in the crackdown against the massive protests sweeping the country. Countries including Germany, Sweden, and Canada will reportedly send troops to Greenland. This comes amid President Trump's threats to take control of the self-governing Danish territory. Before meeting with officials from Denmark and Greenland today, Trump said anything less than U.S. control of Greenland would be unacceptable. The Clintons face a contempt of Congress vote next week connected to the Jeffrey Epstein investigation. That according to Republican Congressman James Comer, who heads the GOP-led House committee looking into the Epstein investigation. Former President Clinton and former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton didn't show for their scheduled depositions this week, accusing Republicans of selective prosecution. Civil rights figure Claudette Colvin is dead at the age of 86. Colvin's 1955 arrest for refusing to give up her seat on a segregated Montgomery bus helped spark the modern civil rights movement. She was arrested months before Rosa Parks drew national attention for also refusing to give up her seat. A representative of Claudette Colvin's Legacy Foundation confirming she died of natural causes in Texas Tuesday. From your AveMariaRadio.net news desk, I'm Steve Clark.
Good afternoon and welcome back. I'm Marcus Peter. President Donald Trump recently said Republicans need to be flexible on taxpayer-funded abortions. Bishop Daniel Thomas joins us to respond and discuss the importance of the Hyde Amendment. Bishop Daniel Thomas has served as the Bishop of the Diocese of Toledo since 2014. He's also chairman of the Pro-Life Activities Committee of the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops. Bishop Daniel, great to speak with you. How are you?
Thank you, Marcus. Thank you so much for speaking, and I'm so grateful to be on with you, especially as we're in the midst of our Novena for Life as we prepare for the March for Life next week on the remembrance of the Roe v. Wade decision, January 22nd.
I agree with you. And because of that and the anniversary of Roe v. Wade, I think it's really important that we all hear your insights into President Donald Trump's very irresponsible statement. What do you make of it?
So I think we, you know, one can never judge what the president says, and perhaps not even take it at face value. Mm. But I think what we have to say is the president and others certainly know that the bishops have for a long time supported the Hyde Amendment. And, of course, the bishops have taught that a central part of health care is that it protects human life. Abortion is not health care. And so we oppose health care policies or the using of taxpayer dollars that fund insurance programs that fund abortions. And therefore, we really want to say the right to life and the right to health should not be at odds. And of course, as bishops, we are 1,000,000% behind providing authentic health care for those who need it. But we are not behind, in a sense, looking at various ways which we can perhaps compromise our commitment to life. And Marcus, I have to, you know, it's absolutely brilliant that we have a wonderful quote, which is from the Pope himself, from Pope Leo, when he spoke just last week to diplomats and said the Holy See commented, he said, the Holy See considers it deplorable that public resources are allocated to suppress life rather than being invested to support mothers and families. So the gracious gift of his words and that clarity, it can be used to respond in this case.
And that clarity is going to be crucial as Catholics continue to engage the pro-life debate, because despite the fact that Roe v. Wade has been overturned, we all know that the work continues until abortion becomes unthinkable.
And it continues in every state, because we know now it's been remanded back to the states. And as you're aware, sadly, in my own state, you know, we had this battle and we lost this battle, but it continues throughout the various states. So that's why it's so very, very important. We can't just say, oh, well, they, you know, the Supreme Court ruled, overturned it. Well, that is true. But however, we really still very much have abortion in the law, in states, and others will continue it. So we need to oppose it at every turn.
To that end, the Hyde Amendment becomes a tool in the arsenal of the opposition of abortion. It doesn't ban abortion by itself, but just knowing that it allows for taxpayer funding to be restricted from being used for elective abortions can go a long way in the cause.
Right. And of course, you know, people have to understand, Marcus, that we support reviving the enhanced health insurance credits and caring for millions of people who need health care and that they might be able to access coverage. But we also need to take the opportunity, finally, to apply the full Hyde Amendment to the credits or whatever proposals might come to stop making taxpayers pay for health plans that cover elective abortion. And so we want to be clear that we want them to work as hard as they can. We're supportive 1,000,000% of getting health care done. But we also want to be faithful to that Hyde Amendment and say we cannot condone public taxpayer dollars going to the murder of innocent children in the womb.
That's one of the things that we don't stop to think about, Your Excellency, that the way taxpayer funding is directed is not just indicative of the culture. Sometimes it can shape cultural direction, and that's what we want to be cautious about.
Right. And frankly, you know, we're urging lawmakers to work creatively to enact legislation that doesn't compromise the dignity of the human person and that ensures access to authentic, life-affirming health care.
Now, because of that, Your Excellency, as we fight for the continued appeal to things like the Hyde Amendment, at your office, you're also constantly putting forth resources to aid women mothers to understand that when they find out they're pregnant, they are not without recourse.
Precisely. And, you know, our efforts have certainly been for mothers and families. And, of course, one of our programs that's now been in place from the USCCB for 5 years, and it's now become very much a part of so many parishes throughout the country. And this program literally assists mothers who find themselves in need and who are invited, encouraged, and, you know, counseled to be able to keep their children and also to bring their children, obviously, to birth and give them assistance in so many ways that they deserve and that their child deserves to come into this world.
Which brings us back to that earlier statement that the president made to Republicans about being more flexible when it comes to abortion. The truth of the matter is we need to double down, because it's not just the lives in the womb that are at stake, but these mothers are laying their lives down in jeopardy every time they engage in elective abortion.
Very much. And I think what we have to say is, you know, we don't know the ins and outs of what goes on the Hill or politics, but what we do know is that we want to encourage, because, you know, the Hyde Amendment has had, Marcus, bipartisan support in Congress and for some time. So we want to get back to that. And, you know, we want to be able to say, listen, this is what is going on, and we want to ensure that taxpayer dollars do not fund abortion.
Yeah, and one of the issues we're facing is, at least since the 2010s, that bipartisan support from those who identify with, say, a progressivist lean politically, has been waning. In fact, if anything, it's become a bit of a measure of progressivist politics to oppose the Hyde Amendment.
Right. And of course, the reality is, I think there has to be some work back and forth across the aisle, because there certainly are plenty of people who understand our position. And, you know, I think the bottom line is, if we really want health care for these millions of people, then we should recognize and at least accept, let's work together to get this done.
One of the arguments that's been made is, since Dobbs versus Jackson was passed, the Hyde Amendment basically serves no purpose. But that's actually not true. And I wonder if you could speak to that, Your Excellency.
Well, I think the reality is, in fact, there's a Marist poll, Marcus, that found that a bipartisan majority of everyday Americans still support the Hyde Amendment. So the question is, you know, do our elected officials reflect the majority opinion of everyday Americans?
The other issue that seems to arise, especially when it comes to time for the national elections, is that argument that, well, abortion is one issue amongst many. Could you please speak to that in the lens of Catholic morality?
Well, again, I think we have to go back, and I think it's a beautiful reality that we can use, you know, our new Holy Father's statements to support this, because for him to say, you know, that it's deplorable that public resources are allocated to suppress life. In his very next sentence, Marcus, Pope Leo XIV says, the primary objective must remain the protection of every unborn child and the effective and concrete support of every woman so that she is able to welcome life. I don't think we can get clearer, and you and I know that the bishops have long said that this issue is the preeminent issue regarding life. And in the end, it's the social justice issue of our day, huh?
I agree. I couldn't agree more. There literally is no social justice issue in the public sphere right now that harms and affects more lives than abortion. It really is the modern Holocaust.
Right. And, you know, I think some people get caught up and confused, perhaps, Marcus, saying, well, they're valuing the life of an unborn child over and against, for example, the life of a prisoner or the life of an immigrant or the life, you know, of the elderly. Not at all. I think the distinction is that there is no greater violence, because there are no greater, there are no more innocent, vulnerable, and people who have no defense than the unborn and the preborn in the womb.
Your Excellency, always a joy to connect with you. Thank you for your strong words of support for life in the womb.
so appreciate the chance to chat with you and all the listeners. Thank you, Marcus.
My guest has been Bishop Daniel Thomas, Bishop of Diocese of Toledo, and we've been talking about fighting for life of the unborn.
Do you own popular index mutual funds or ETFs? If so, you're automatically owned shares of companies that conflict with your moral beliefs. Ave Maria mutual funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors can invest in the no-load Ave Maria mutual funds. The experienced professional portfolio managers make decisions based on investment fundamentals and pro-life values. You can learn more about Ave Maria mutual funds today at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
Looking for practical, faith-filled help to build the marriage you're longing for or become a more confident Catholic parent? I'm Lisa Popcheck, co-founder of the Catholic Home app. That's Catholic H-O-M for Catholic Households on Mission. The Catholic H-O-M app gives you daily coaching, creative tools, and real-life support to help your family thrive. Subscribe to the Catholic H-O-M app today and discover the path to a more rewarding, faith-filled family life.
Strained or broken relationships are a given in most of our lives. Friends fall away, siblings drift apart, children sever ties with their parents. And despite our best efforts, these painful fissures are difficult to mend. Hi, I'm Dr. Ray. If you want to learn how to communicate better with the difficult people in your life and be a more easygoing, more forgiving person, check out my book, How to Get Along with Almost Everybody. Check it out. And all my other books on the store page at AveMariaRadio.net. That's AveMariaRadio.net.
Pope Francis said, "The key that opens the door to faith is prayer." Join St. Paul Street Evangelization by running a prayer station in the public square. You don't need to be a professional apologist or theologian. Just listen to the needs of the people you encounter. Offer encouragement, take prayer requests, and pray with people. Find out more and get involved today at streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com.
Good afternoon and welcome back. I'm Marcus Peter. The Supreme Court is hearing oral arguments this week in two cases that will determine whether states can preserve girls' sports teams. My friend Andrea Picciotti-Bear joins us with more. Andrea is a legal analyst for EWTN News and director of the Conscience Project. Follow her work at conscience-project.org, and you can follow her on X at Bea Picciotti as well. Andrea, so great to speak with you again. How are you?
I'm doing great, Marcus, although I am recovering from a cold, so if I sound a little different, a little more like Demi Moore, I apologize.
This is going to sound awful. I'm not entirely sure who that is. I know she's an actress. I know she's an actress. I can't.
Am I that much older than you are?
No. I'm disconnected from pop culture is what it is. Now,
you're a better man for it. So count yourself blessed.
So let's have an overview of what the cases are. Little versus Hecox and West Virginia versus BPJ. Let's talk about the context of them and then dive deeper from there.
Yeah, no, great. Both of these cases involve state laws. There are two states among 27, I think, that have state laws basically protecting the fairness and safety of women and girls sports teams. Idaho and West Virginia were among the first states to pass laws basically pushing against gender ideologues' attempts to put boys and men into sporting events that were supposed to be for girls and women. These laws were challenged by a university student in Idaho who identifies as a woman and was barred from trying out for his track and cross-country teams, and for a young boy from West Virginia who wanted to take part in girls' teams and is curiously is identified as a girl since the third grade, which is kind of shocking to imagine. I have a third grader myself, and I can't even conceive of this.
Mm-hmm.
What's even more, I guess, baffling is these challenges, which are claiming violations of the Constitution in both cases, but also Title IX, which is a law that protects and prevents sex discrimination in federally funded educational programs, the challengers were victorious in the lower courts, which is really a bit of a head scratcher. And so it really is important that this Supreme Court, that just seems to have more often than not their head on their shoulders, can properly interpret the Constitution, interpret a law that was really kind of enacted for the good of women and girls in a way that's not going to be kind of a backdoor way to undermine it entirely. And so, Marcus, on Tuesday, the Supreme Court held oral argument in both cases, and the argument lasted over 3 hours. It was incredible.
Wow. And just for our listeners, they're being heard as a consolidated case.
You know, they were being consolidated the time for argument, but they are being kind of analyzed on their own grounds. And part of it is because there are different allegations being made. And in one of the cases, the one involving the student from Idaho, he is actually trying to walk away from the lawsuit. And that was an issue that was discussed by the court, whether this issue, right? He is claiming that he no longer wants to participate in sports, and so there's an active controversy, but that didn't get any traction with the justices, except for Justice Sonia Sotomayor. But in general, you know, there are these binding precedents that would affect not just Idaho, but also all of the states that are covered by the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, which ruled in this challenger's favor. So it really seems like this just needs to be clarified once and for all.
Given that this needs to be clarified yet again, can you talk about Bostock versus Clayton County? You brought it up before, but also United States versus Cometti. So this isn't the first time cases of this nature have been brought up.
Yeah, I mean, recently, this is kind of a recent phenomenon, right? Gender ideology in general. Who would have thought? But in the last five, 6 years, these issues have come before the court. And the two big cases are what you mentioned before, Bostock versus Clayton County, which involved Title VII, which is a federal law prohibiting employment discrimination because of sex. And in that case, Justice Neil Gorsuch infamously wrote for the majority, saying that the because of sex part of Title VII covers allegations of discrimination based on sexual orientation and gender identity. I think that was just a terribly decided case, and I like Justice Gorsuch, but I think he made a big mistake here. Fortunately, it doesn't seem like he's willing to extend the reasoning of Bostock into Title IX. Two very different statutes with different purposes, and I think that it's good to kind of leave Bostock where it is. Hopefully someday it will be overruled. But the other case was a case, Marcus, that came from last year, and that was U.S. versus Scarametti that we spoke about before. And that dealt with upholding Tennessee's ban on certain medical treatments for transgender minors to kind of, I guess we now can officially call it sex-rejecting treatments, which is a recent statement that the Trump administration has coined, a recent phrasing, which I think is really way more accurate than gender-affirming care. And in that case, Chief Justice John Roberts said, this law is going to be subject to rational basis review by courts, and was unwilling to consider transgender people as a suspect class, deserving kind of a more heightened judicial review.
One of the things that you highlight that has been part of this legal conversation is Title IX prohibitions. Help us understand the application here.
Yeah, I mean, it's very interesting. There's always like two sides of the coin, right? This case has challengers that are biological males that identify as females wanting to participate in female sports, and their states are barring that participation. But there are also women and girl athletes that are challenging the inclusion of biological males into female sports. highlighting the kind of injustice that's happened. People probably remember the University of Pennsylvania swimmer Leah Thomas, who was, you know, basically just smoking the other female swimmers and upseated several of them in competitions. He has since been stripped of many of those awards, but we really just, it's a time for kind of a dose of reality. And Title IX is really a critical law that restored fairness for girls and women and to be able to access things like scholarships and athletic opportunities. And to see the trans movement undermine those goals would really be a travesty.
A travesty is an understatement, to say the least. But to consider that, like you mentioned, part of that discussion is also equal protection clauses.
Yeah, and that's where the justices really were scratching their head, right? Because you need to understand what sex is in order to figure out whether there's discrimination on the basis of sex, whether under Title IX or the Equal Protection Clause. And the lawyers representing the challengers just refused to offer a definition. So instead, it was kind of some amorphous idea of wanting to be identified as a female for purposes of sports, but not really giving any clear definition of what it is to be a woman, which was a question that was raised to Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson during her confirmation hearings. And sadly, she wasn't able to come up with a definition either.
Well, we will keep following the developments of this. But Andrea, thank you so much for being at the forefront of covering this and enlightening us about what's going on in this crucial case.
Well, thanks for having me on, Marcus.
My guest has been Andrea Picciotti-Bayer, legal analyst for EWTN News. We're talking about Little versus Hecox and West Virginia versus BPJ being heard at the Supreme Court in terms of oral arguments. Stay tuned. I'm Marcus Peter.
This program brought to you in part by Ave Maria, Florida, a big kind of small town where golf carts take you everywhere and there's always something fun around the corner. Discover championship golf, resort-style amenities, and a town center full of shopping and dining. With Ave Maria University and Ave Maria Catholic Church at its heart, it's a community full of connection and charm. More than 25 model homes are available for viewing. More information can be found at avemaria.com. That's avemaria.com.
Ave Maria in the Afternoon is underwritten by the following nonprofit organization: Real Estate for Life. Buying or selling your home or business property? Real Estate for Life can connect you with one of 1,400 pro-life real estate agents around the world. When Real Estate for Life receives a referral fee, they donate 70% to Ave Maria Radio and Human Life International. More information at realestateforlife.org or 877-LIFE-US1. That's realestateforlife.org.
The wisdom of Mother Angelica.
Isn't it awesome that we today do not recognize his presence in the Eucharist? Is it because we really don't go to him in humbleness of heart and say, Lord, I don't believe, help my unbelief. Lord, I want to see you. I want to recognize you. I cannot live without you. Are we saying that?
EWTN. Live truth. Live Catholic.
When the need for senior care arises, home is where the heart is. Visiting Angels provides home care for mom or dad up to 24 hours per day, including personal care, meals, and light housework. You may select your professional caregiver with Visiting Angels. More information at visitingangels.com or at 877-374-LIVE. That's 877-374-LIVE. Visiting Angels, America's choice in senior home care.
Christ is the answer, with Father John Ricardo.
John chapter 8, verse 51. Jesus is in a discussion with some of the leaders of the Jews. They're talking about Abraham. Abraham lived 1,500 years before the time of Jesus. So in the course of the discussion, Jesus says, "Truly, truly, I say to you, if anyone keeps my word, he will never see death." He says that often in the Gospels. "He who keeps my word or believes in me will never die." To which the Jews say, "Now we know you have a demon." And they say, "Abraham died, as did the prophets. all the patriarchs, the great men and women of the history of Israel. All these people died, and you say, if anyone keeps my word, he will never taste death? Are you greater than our father Abraham, who died? And the prophets who died? And Jesus says, your father Abraham rejoiced that he was to see my day. He saw it and was glad. To which the Jews say, you are not yet 50 years old, and you've seen Abraham? And Jesus answers, truly, truly, I say to you, before Abraham was, I am.
Dr. Ray Guarendi.
Most experts don't think like you do. Go to the computer. Type in child, self-esteem, search. Last time I looked, 31 million options. The experts believe self-esteem is the preeminent moral virtue. Type in child, humility, search. Crickets. Why? When was the last time you heard a secular expert talk about humility? But that's at the very core of the virtues we want to teach our children. Always remember one thing. When an expert tells you how to raise your child, you have to ask a question. Is this expert of the same worldview that I am? Does he or she value the same virtues I want to impart to my children?
Good afternoon and welcome back. I'm Marcus Peter. The Holy Family serves as the pattern and model for marriage and family, demonstrating what these are, as well as the correct understanding of masculinity and fatherhood, femininity and motherhood, babies and children. In our age, where there's tremendous moral and role confusion, it's time for you and I to consecrate ourselves and our families to the Holy Family. Father Donald Calloway joins us. He's no stranger to this program. He's a convert to Catholicism, member of the Congregation of Marian Fathers of the Immaculate Conception, author of many books, most recently, 33 Days to the Holy Family, Consecration to Jesus, Mary, and Joseph. Father, thank you for being with us. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing great. Yeah, good to be with you again.
Well, I'm really glad to speak with you about this, and I want to share a little anecdote. Before the book came out, I was actually sitting around wondering, gosh, wouldn't it be wonderful if someone wrote a consecration to the Holy Family? My bride and I have done the consecration to Mary and consecration to Joseph, and we have a deep devotion to the Holy Family. So I take it that my suggestion prompted you to write this.
Of course. Yeah. Where do I send the royalties check, brother?
But truly, sincerely, as a family man, a husband, a father, thank you. Thank you very much for this insight and for the research that was done. I want to ask that you share what prompted your heart to go down the path of the Holy Family. You did brilliant work with the Consecration of St. Joseph, but you expanded it here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, you know, Sister Lucia dos Santos, you know, the visionary from Fatima who lived the longest, she had made a comment to a cardinal at one point that the final battle between good and evil would be fought over marriage and family. And, you know, I think today it's undeniable that the family is under attack. Many, you know, countries have redefined what a family is, redefined what marriage is. And so I thought, well, you know, we've got all these consecrations to Our Lady, to the Sacred Heart, to St. Joseph, and they're all great. But we need one to the Holy Family in light of the times. And so my friend and I, Scott Smith, a great gentleman, Catholic lawyer down in Louisiana, we thought, let's co-author this. Let's each do our part and put this together. Him from the perspective of, you know, being a husband and a father, and me from being a priest. And so, yeah, we put it together and just became available literally not even 2 weeks ago.
And as soon as it was available, we procured a copy, and it's been a truly insightful read. Now, I want to begin the way you begin, which is, why should anyone consider a consecration to the Holy Family?
Yeah, well, you know, again, I think, you know, we all come from a family. We all come into the world the same way. You know, none of us comes from some other planetary system. We're all, you know, here. And so there's something fundamental about getting back to the basics. In the times in which we live right now, so much stuff is up for grabs. People are confused about their, you know, their sex, they're about what bathroom to use and all, you know, who can play in what sports and all this stuff. But you know what? It's time to get back to the basics, the fundamentals. And I think a lot of this stuff is rooted in our upbringing, in what we're being taught. And so it's time to return to the family. And we got to look for the model of that. And the model is the Holy Family. And so I think right now, for all of us, you know, this book can be done by individuals. It can be done by a family. It can be done by, you know, a couple who is about to be married, you know, nuns in a convent. It's applicable to everyone. We all need the Holy Family.
At the risk of, but and I want to be careful here that our listeners understand, we're not trying to hyper-spiritualize, but a big reason why this is, Father, is that the attack on the family is cultural, sure, societal, admittedly, political, definitely, but it's also deeply spiritual.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Because, you know, ultimately, as many saints have said, and popes as well, you know, the Holy Family, so Jesus, Mary, and Joseph, is basically a shadow, if you will, of the Holy Trinity. Now, Jesus, of course, is a divine person, so there's not a shadow there. He is a member of the Holy Trinity. But the saints will say that the Trinity, the Holy Family on earth, is a mirror image of the Holy Family in heaven. And so that spiritual aspect is there. And so with the attack on the family today, it's ultimately an attack on the Holy Trinity, on the root of all familial relations, of all goodness, truth, and beauty, grounded in God, in the Holy Trinity. And so the spiritual dimension is there. And if we can correct this, if we can get back to the basics, I think, you know, we can turn things around in the crazy times in which we live. And protecting and defending and promoting the family is an essential part of this.
Why, just based on Sister Lucia's statement of what was revealed to her at Fatima, why target the family? I think it's important our readers and our listeners understand. Why does Satan come after the family specifically?
Well, I think, you know, it's an interesting, you know, question, because if you look at divine revelation, you know, we begin with a family, Adam and Eve. And so God set it up that way. It's a fundamental, as even poets and secular authors will say, it's the fundamental building block of civilization. If you don't have the family unit, things very quickly turn into chaos, and there's no foundation, and everything is just basically whoever has the strongest will and might and power can rule the day. But that's not how God intended it. He himself, when he chose to save humanity, he didn't just appear out of the heavens and come down already formed as a 33-year-old Messiah, you know, to save the world. He could have. No, he came through a family. He came through Mary and Joseph, and was raised there, lived there. As a matter of fact, you think about it, like Venerable, soon to be, hopefully, Blessed Fulton Sheen says that he gave 30 years to Mary and Joseph. He only gave 3 to his apostles. And so there's something deep there about God loves the family. He delights in the family. He wanted to live in that family for so long. And he wants to live in our families. So,
and because he wants to live in our families, it's crucial that we model our family life after the family par excellence.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely. Because, you know, deep down, I think we're all looking for structure, we're looking for the pillars, we're looking for things that will sustain us and hold us up. And, you know, here right in front of our face is the answer, the family, and in particular the Holy Family. And so sadly, you know, unfortunately, many people have been hurt by the family unit, or they've had a father figure who's, you know, not been virtuous, who's maybe hurt them emotionally, psychologically, physically, or worse. But here in this family unit, you never have to worry about that. They're affirming, they're loving, they're kind, they're merciful with us always. And I think that right now, with so many wounds in the world, so much dysfunctional families out there, everyone can look to the Holy Family to see, you know what, how do we shore this up again? How do we get this back again? And they're the model.
Because they're the model, Father, I want to ask for you to also speak as a spiritual father, and maybe even in a slight discipline for all of us listening. that one of the main reasons families are breaking down is we have forgotten the hierarchy of vocations, even when we are living family life.
Mm-hmm. Yes, all very much so. You know, because a lot of people, they don't like that language today, and so they hear hierarchy, or they hear, for example, that the man is the head of the family, and they just panic. They just, oh, how dare you? You know, I'm that triggered me. I'm offended. Well, settle down now, relax, because we're not talking about some caveman beating you over the head and saying, woman, make me breakfast. You know, no, we're talking about servant leadership modeled after Christ himself, who is the head of the church, which is his bride. And it's not because, you know, when we make those kind of statements, we're saying that men are better than women. No, not at all. We're absolutely equal in our dignity, but each has a distinctive role and a mission to fulfill. Contrary to what the world may think, you know, men can't have babies. And no matter what we try and clip and cut off and maybe try and add, it's just not going to happen. And that's okay. It's natural. It's normal. It's how God intended it. Now, if we live our vocation, we're going to be happy. We're going to be holy. And now's the time to get back to those fundamentals of what does it mean to be a man? What does it mean to be a woman, father, mother, all those things. And the church has the answers.
My guest is Father Donald Calloway. He's an MIC priest, and he's the author of 33 Days to the Holy Family. This is a beautiful work that allows your family to be consecrated to the family that God has made on earth. Continuing on the other side, stay tuned. I'm Marcus Peter.
You like pizza? Me too. And for that, we can thank our friend, Tom Monahan. First, he starts with $900 and opens one pizza shop. Then it's worldwide, thousands of shops. But all this was just a warm-up for his greatest achievement yet. He built a university.
God inspired Tom to build up generations of men and women who have a hunger to reach the world for Christ. This place is Ave Maria University.
Visit avemaria.edu to see what's next.
Steve and Janet Ray here, announcing we are back in the Holy Land, ready to introduce you to our favorite places in the world, the land where God walked. Mass at the most holy sites, pray the mysteries of the rosary where they happened, and experience the Bible in vivid color. We have led over 100 groups through this land, sharing the whole story of salvation. Of all the pilgrimages in all of the world, this is the one you should not miss.
Find the Ave Maria Radio travel tab at avemariaradio.net.
The following program is brought to you in part by MyCatholicWill.com. Surveys show that more than half of Americans do not have a will. At MyCatholicWill.com, it takes as little as 15 minutes to write your will and secure a legacy of faith. MyCatholicWill.com is the exclusive online destination for creating a Catholic will. The process of writing a will is simple and now more accessible than ever. MyCatholicWill.com, a legacy of faith for those you love.
Ave Maria School of Law is the Roman Catholic law school in the United States. Consistently ranked in the Princeton Review as one of the best and most conservative law schools, as well as pre-law's most devout law school. Ave Maria School of Law provides a traditional legal education while emphasizing how the law intersects with the Catholic intellectual tradition and natural law philosophy. Ave Maria School of Law, unabashedly Catholic, consistently excellent. For more information, visit avemarialaw.edu.
60 on 10 with Monsignor Charles Pope.
The 10th commandment, you shall not covet your neighbor's goods. This commandment is similar to the 9th because it uses the word covet, which means to inordinately or inappropriately desire something. And therefore, related to this are concepts that are familiar to us, such as greed or avarice, which is the undue passion for riches and power. Likewise, envy and jealousy are related here. In jealousy, you have something that I want, but I want it inappropriately or excessively. Envy, however, is a very dark thing because it wants to destroy that which is good in another person because it makes me look bad by comparison. And so in all these ways, the Lord is asking us to look very carefully to our desires because they can grow too expansive and lead us into very grave sins. The 10th commandment, you shall not covet your neighbor's goods.
For more about the 10 commandments, visit EWTNRC.com.
What does the Catholic Catechism teach about divorce? The Church does not permit divorce in a valid marriage because she is firmly adhering to the rules set down by her founder. Jesus Christ made it very clear that a sacramental valid marriage was not to be dissolved. Whoever divorces his wife, he declared, and marries another commits adultery against her. And if she divorces her husband and marries another, she commits adultery. Therefore, the Church maintains a second marriage cannot be recognized as valid if the first marriage is valid. The Catechism tells us if the divorced are remarried civilly, they find themselves in a situation that objectively contravenes God's law. In such a situation, they may not receive Eucharistic communion as long as this situation persists. This is Peggy Stanton, and this has been the Order of Malta's Minute with the Catechism.
Good afternoon and welcome back. I'm Marcus Pete. I'm talking with Father Donald Kenilway, MIC priest and author of 33 Days to the Holy Family, Consecration to Jesus, Mary, and Joseph. Father, I want to pick up where we had left off. You had just talked about the need for understanding a proper hierarchy within the family itself, which, as you mentioned, say that and you can just feel the hackles rise up. But to take it a step further, can you also address the way even Catholics now think about family? For example, that the focus is about achievement or career or the performance of the children, so much so that virtue, sainthood, and the integrity of the marriage tend to be later or even final considerations.
Right. Yeah, it's unfortunate, but that's what's happening in many families. And, you know, they're basically just living for themselves, and it becomes very individualistic, even though there is a family. You know, each member of the family is meant to help the other members get to heaven, not to inhibit them, not to put barriers. And there's always going to be family struggles, of course, all the dynamics and drama, and, you know, it's a valley of tears. But each one has a particular gifts that they can give to the other. And when they live that sacrificial love for each other, I mean, it's a beautiful thing. Unfortunately, that's become inverted these days when children are suing parents or trying to tell their parents what to do, and all the confusion that's taken place with who does what. And sadly, for example, one of the things I mention a lot at men's conferences in particular, I often say to men, I say, guys, do you take charge of your family's spiritual life? You know, are you the one who initiates the prayers? Are you the one who, you know, wakes your beautiful daughter up on a Sunday and says, come on, sweetheart, we're going to see Jesus. We're going to church. Are you the one that takes your son to confession? Don't leave it for your wife to do. Because oftentimes that's what happens, right? And I often say, you know, look at the Holy Family. You have Jesus, Mary, and Joseph. Whose role was it in that family unit to lead the prayers? It was Joseph's. Mm. Now, Jesus could have done it perfectly and flawlessly. He's God. Mary could have done it better than Joseph. She's the Immaculate Conception. She's the spouse of the Spirit. But neither one of them usurped Joseph's role. They let him lead the prayers, even though he would not have done them as well, although very well, of course, in comparison to them. And so each has a role to play. And when it's done well at service to the others, my, I mean, it's a beautiful thing. And I think we need to recover that. And it takes a lot of humility so that we realize it's not about us. It's the individual. It's about the family unit.
Reading your book, one of the things you come to very clearly, too, is the family can't be a family if you don't have a shared sense of spiritual mission. Can you please speak to that?
Yeah, I mean, it's very difficult, you know, and I deal with this a lot as a priest. You're talking to couples who, you know, they were young and they fell in love and then they got married, but yet they never had conversations about, do they believe in the same deity? Do they believe in the same, you know, things? I mean, you know, is one doing math this way, so to speak, and getting an answer, and the other doing math and they're getting a different answer? Well, that's not going to be good. Mm-hmm. How are you going to build a foundation of a home on that when you don't agree on fundamentals? So it is very important for couples before they're married to have these conversations. You know, raising the children, your belief systems, your morals and ethics, and all of those things have to be talked about. And if God is not the center of your lives, you're headed for disaster. That's why, you know, again, Fulton Sheen says that it's really three that are getting married. He has a great book called Three to Get Married, I think is the title of it. You have to bring God into that. If not, it's really on sand. It's going to be shaky. There's going to be problems.
And that shakiness will translate into the breakdown of the family unit. But if you do have that shared sense of mission, then the next question I want to ask is, some people might say, you're telling me to consecrate myself to the Holy Family, but I'd rather focus on God the Father, who's the source of all fatherhood. Mm. But even then, your book responds to that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, exactly. And that's good. I mean, there's nothing, all things are directed to the Heavenly Father. You know, if you listen to the prayers at Mass, we're directing that sacrifice of Christ there, the representation of Calvary at Mass to the Father. So that's good. But again, I mean, it's the family unit, you know, that's so vital and life-giving that Jesus came to us through the family. We return to him through the family. And we're actually spiritually adopted into his family. You know, Mary, she's our spiritual mother. Joseph is our spiritual father. Jesus is our Lord and Savior, our God, and we worship and adore him. But he's also, you know, our older brother. He is invited us to be incorporated into his family. And that's such a gift. That's such a blessing. Why would you want to deprive yourself of that? Because ultimately, the Holy Family, Jesus leading the way, is going to take us to the Heavenly Father, to his kingdom.
And therefore, being close to the Holy Family unites us into Trinitarian intimacy. In fact, what you show is the Holy Family lived what the life of the Trinity ought to look like in human families.
Yes, yes. And that's a beautiful thing. Because, you know, when we tap into the inner workings of the Holy Family, we're really going deeper into the life of the Trinity, and we're seeing that reciprocal love that is present, that is forever. It has no beginning and no end in the Holy Trinity, and we've been created to participate in that. And a great introduction to that is, you know, getting to be a member of the Holy Family here on earth, living with Jesus, Mary, and Joseph in preparation for the kingdom and living forever with the Holy Trinity.
And there's a real greatness to embracing that life in the Trinity, because then all of a sudden it gives proper context into how husbands ought to be husbands and fathers, and mm-hmm. vice versa, how mothers ought to be brides and mothers. Without it, you're kind of flying blind.
That's right. You are flying blind, and you're gonna seek a pattern somewhere. You're gonna try and find meaning in it somehow, and you certainly don't want the world defining that for you, or Hollywood, or you know, this sports figure or this musician that you like his tunes or whatever. I mean, no. Those are all flawed models. They're all gonna have defects. Mm. Why not go to the blueprint? I mean, you know, if you see a bridge and you see it's falling down, you're going to want to go back to the blueprints and say, okay, here's the issue. We've got to shore it up here. This is where the problem is. Well, it's the same thing with the family unit. Go to the blueprint, to the model, to the prototype, and that's Jesus, Mary, and Joseph.
And therefore, one thing reading your book shows, too, is why it's so necessary for there to be a good father and a good mother. So can you speak to the need for God's plan of this sexual binary, the maleness of the father, the femaleness of the mother, and how that boosts the stability of the family?
Yeah, well, it's a beautiful thing, you know, that complementarity. It's not a competition. You know, the world wants to put it in that category of, you know, you have to be this or you have to be that, or you've usurped my rights, or, you know, but all those. No. There's no competition. It's complementarity. It's such a beautiful thing, because when you get that, when you see that being exercised, you know, you realize that boys are going to need a dad in a different way than a girl is. Mm. You know, she's going to need him for affirmation and protecting her beauty and innocence and all that. But a boy is going to relate to his father in a different way, and vice versa. A boy's going to relate to the mother in a different way. And so that's really important, because, you know, a lot of people, you could ask, well, the God-man, when Jesus took on human nature and masculinity in particular, did he really need St. Joseph? I mean, if he wasn't his biological father, why did he need him at all? Well, he did, because Jesus grew as a young boy, and he looked to St. Joseph to grow in his manhood, and in a way that he would not have looked to the Virgin Mary, even though she's immaculate, a perfect creature. She's not a man. Mm. There's certain things that boys need to learn from their dads that a mom can't teach, that a mom can't offer, and vice versa. A girl needs to learn things from her mom, what it means to be a lady, what it means to be feminine, what it means, all those things that are so beautiful about women that a father can't teach. And so when you see that, and there's no competition, there's complementarity, you're raising saints. You're raising things in an orderly way. And there's going to be peace. There's going to be harmony in the family. And it continues generation after generation. But when you break that down, when you attack that, when you cause confusion, when you bring in darkness and lies, we're seeing the fruit of that today.
We truly are. I want to ask also to address the flip side, which is entering into this consecration, striving to model our families after the right model, which is the Holy Family, that doesn't guarantee that life is going to be a bed of roses and free from suffering.
Mm. No, you're absolutely right there. Yes, there's no promise that we're going to, you know, have perfect happiness in this life and be free of suffering. No. That's never been promised by God. And part of the reason is because this is our training ground. Mm. This is where we grow in virtue and sacrificial love. And those who have the ability to understand that wisdom, understand the wisdom of the cross, that it's, you know, many have said, if the angels could be jealous of us, they would, because they can't suffer. Mm-hmm. They can't make sacrifices. We can, because we have bodies. We can take on, as members of the body of Christ, things that not even Christ was able to undergo when he lived this earth, or things that he did not undergo. For example, you know, if a family member, for example, gets cancer, okay, you know, our Lord and Savior never had cancer, mm-hmm. but he lives in us now. Mm. And when we unite that with him, oh my goodness, the sacrificial love, the service we can be to a family member and helping them to go through that, being with them, oh, we can grow in virtue and become so holy.
Father, thank you very much. This was a true delight. My guest has been Father Donald Calloway, MIC priest, author of 33 Days to the Holy Family. Procure a copy. This is a very moving consecration. Thank you for joining us. I'm Marcus Peter.